Hey, you're listening to Block Thinking with Werner Puchert.
Irina Alexiak and Adam Levinsky is both part of the volunteer team at TEDx Warsaw 2019. Irina takes care of event experience, while Adam is the project owner. In fact, Adam has been involved with TEDx Warsaw since it's been established here in Poland. We use Adam's knowledge to talk about TED and TEDx and how the two brands fit together and some of the history of TEDx in Poland. And then we cover what it takes to step onto the red circle, some tips about speaking in front of people, and maybe how you could be a future TEDx speaker. I don't know if I'm ready yet. Are you? We cover the topic of volunteering for TEDx Warsaw, what these guys do, and what they might need, and how you could apply to become a volunteer in the future. Full disclosure, Irina invited me in my air quotes professional capacity to help them with some of the event design. We've been using the event design process that is loosely based on design thinking to design some of the event experience. So I'm personally very excited to see how TEDx Warsaw 2019 is going to unfold. I'm also very humbled and want to thank the other volunteers that I met along the way who has allowed me to peek behind the curtain. These guys work hard. So think about them next time you lie in bed early Saturday morning. These guys are already out there planning TEDx Warsaw. Oh yes, and by the way, by the time you hear this episode, tickets will be available. You can apply for your ticket at tedxwarsaw.org. So let me hand it over to Irina and Adam.
My name's Irina, and I'm the head of event experience at TEDx Warsaw 2019. So apart from that, I also work in corporate. I work for Procter & Gamble, and I just finished my studies in innovation design.
Thanks, Adam.
So I guess the reason we meet today is because I am the project owner of the said event, so TEDx Warsaw 2019. But that's like a night job, let's say. And my daily job is that I run some special operations at Rent Like Home, which is a short-term rental operator here in Warsaw.
Where do you guys come from?
So I come from Ukraine. I've been living in Warsaw for 11 years now, with some moments of moving around to Krakow or to Barcelona or to little bits of Germany.
So I was born in Warsaw, and most of my life I lived just outside the city borders. Now I live in Warsaw, another part of it. I can say I'm a local, I guess.
What brings us together here is TEDx. Adam, I think you're the oldest hand. When did this whole TEDx adventure start for you?
Back in 2009, but maybe first we could explain something about TED, what TED is. So TED is big conference. The first one happened in 1984, which you might know from a book, for example, but name called Richard back then saw that there is something cool going on the intersection of technology, entertainment, and design, and hence the name, the acronym TED. So he organized the conference, which was really great, but financially it was a flop. So a couple years went by, and he came back to the idea in the early 90s. And then the conference grew in size, but it was mostly for the people in the know, just for the people from the industries. But over time, the scope was widened, and many more people came in to discuss the issues that they saw as important, what was happening within their industries. And the next big change came in 2001, when Chris Anderson, the current curator of TED, took over the brand. So a couple years down the road, in 2005, he posted the first videos of the talks online. That's incidentally, that's also the year that YouTube launched.
Oh, wow. I didn't
Yeah, so that was the time, the video took off on the internet. And the videos were really popular, it turned out. Before the time, they were just burnt on DVDs and mailed to participants of the event. And after they posted them online, they really got popular. The next big step happened in 2009, like I said, the year that also got involved with this thing, because apart from TED, which is a big very expensive conference. Mm. It's
quite exclusive as well, right?
Depending on what you mean by exclusive, but the price itself, which is a couple $1,000.
I don't think it's like excluding anybody, but to get into a...
Yeah, I mean, first you need to fill out a form and prove that you are worthy of being invited. And then after you get the approval stamp, you need to pay $10,000, at least for the next year's event.
Whoa.
So you can buy a small car for that, basically.
I don't think I'll be going soon. Yeah.
You can get some discounts and you can become a TED Fellow if you do some really cool stuff. And TED Fellows get a free pass, I believe.
Oh, so I'm going to start working.
There are ways to sneak in.
Okay. For South Africans, there's always a little loophole.
Yeah. But anyway, like I said, the number of people who can go to TED is very limited.
Yeah.
If not for the price, then many other reasons.
And also it's a multiple day event.
Almost a week. But anyway, in 2009, Chris decided that maybe before that, because they had to spend a lot of time on designing this thing. But in 2009, they introduced the TEDx program.
Okay.
And with that TEDx program, basically anyone can organize a TED-like event. And that's also the tagline of the TEDx, right? So the independently organized TED event. So you follow some of the formats of the event, but you are limited by the license. And one of the limitations is that it can only be a one-day event. And that's probably the most important one. But also, your tickets the price of the ticket cannot exceed $100 or equivalent in local currency. So you are two orders of magnitude lower than that, with the price at least.
Damn it.
Yeah. So they didn't, by them, I mean TED and TED team, they didn't really think it will be a massive hit, this TEDx program. So they estimated that couple dozen events would happen within the first year, and there were a couple hundred. And now daily on around the world, two or three events happen on average. So quite a lot. At the beginning, it started mostly in the United States and a couple other places around the world. Now the probably vast part of the expansion happens in China.
How is TEDx different?
Because obviously logistics are pretty much the same, right? You need for every event, you need a stage, lights, and so on.
Red dot.
Red dot, it's an addition, let's say, here. But two points which really stand out, there are many more which are of lesser importance, I would say, but the two most important ones are that all the team members are volunteers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is that we work extensively with speakers. With the volunteers, well, you know, oftentimes they are not professionals. They don't do events daily. This is just something that they think is cool and they would like to contribute. And so they do their best, which not necessarily is up to standards that you would expect from some other events. And yet our audience typically is really amazed by what they encounter during the day. Yeah. And when they hear that this was done by volunteers and not professionals and not someone who, designs and executes events daily. And moreover, it is for free because for many years it was for free. Yeah. This year it will be paid. They are really amazed.
What kind of people are you looking for? What is the process to become a volunteer?
Yeah. So when it comes to volunteers, certainly people can apply. I think what I've observed over the years is that it really helps if you know exactly what you want to do. Because quite a few people come with the approach of, I'm available, tell me what to do. And while that is helpful during the event itself, because we need people who will be moving things around or giving out the badges, while we're doing the preparation, especially because it's a volunteer effort, it's wonderful when you can take something that you do on a daily basis or you're very good at, even if it's not your job. For example, you're editing films or movies, and then you come in and you say, hey, you know what? I was thinking I would like to do something with editing films and movies, but I like to do it differently, not the way I do it on my daily basis, or to have a bigger scale for my own portfolio. Yeah. That's the perfect match, because then there is the interest of us as an organization or as the event that we're organizing, and there's the interest of the individual, and they are connected. So that's a much stronger development point than if somebody comes in and says, tell me what to do. So ideally, we're looking for people who have something in mind that they would like to try to, and are looking for like a lab or looking for a space where they can try it out. And honestly, that's what it's been for me. So I did then studies in innovation design and innovation management last year here in Warsaw. And then basically what we've been doing in TEDx this year, also with you, Werner, is reapplying what I did during school last year. So technically you have a clear idea of what you would like to try out.
Yeah.
You might not exactly know how to, but then you find the right people to help you go through that process.
Yeah, because you guys are busy, right? Like there's probably things going on every week. And I think also for people listening, this is not just volunteering on the day of the event. You guys start well in advance. I mean, this has been, I've been talking to you guys since last year.
I mean, one of our meetings was a couple of weeks ago at 6 a.m. in my place because we didn't have the time to meet during the day.
That was one of the most productive meetings we've ever had, actually.
Very quick, loads of posters. So it is a time commitment. It's something to be aware of. Because also some people come in with, oh, it's amazing, I want to be part of something. It really helps if you have an idea of what it is you want to do. And then definitely, I mean, we love people who are one of the forbidden words about the self-starters where you go, hey, you know what? I think you could use what I do in your event.
I want to apply to become a volunteer. What do? Just send an email to Adam.
Pretty much. I'm sure he'd love it. You contact us via the page.
Yeah, not at the moment. Facebook. Sure. That's your direction that you want to take. But anyway, you need to distinguish between the volunteer on the day and the volunteer who actually designs the event.
Okay.
And these are two very different ways of contributing to TEDx Warsaw. Both are valuable, but you need to understand that if you want to design, it takes months in advance. Not entire months, but you need to plan your time accordingly.
There's more than one quotes TEDx in Poland, right? Like, can you speak broadly maybe about Poland itself and then zoom into Warsaw?
Warsaw actually was the first one. So we can start from Warsaw, broader, and then go back.
Okay, great.
So in Warsaw, there were at least three groups of people at the time who wanted to bring TED to Poland. And they wanted to do that even before the TEDx program was introduced. And they all contacted TED. Hey guys, why won't you make a TED event in Poland? Because apart from the yearly events, which happened at that time in Long Beach, California, and now in Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia, they also did like TED Global events, which happened around the world, in Africa, in UK. There was one in India as well. So we thought, hey, why won't you do one in Poland? This is also a cool place to hold such an event. But they were like, not really. We're not.
That's funny.
Yeah. Quite a logistical nightmare. So the one in India, it took them 2 years to pull that off. So they were not particularly interested.
Mm-hmm.
Soon after those requests, the TEDx program was introduced. We're naturally like, okay, they don't want to come. Let's do it ourselves.
Yeah,
that's what it was designed for. So I was a member of one of the groups of people who wanted to do this event in Warsaw.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a student group, let's say. So we were all excited and we were already willing to fill out the form. But then when the time came to actually do this, we saw, oh gosh, someone already has a license for TEDx Warsaw.
Boom. Okay.
And that was some expat. We had no idea who that guy was.
You turn your back and the expat sneaks in.
Exactly. Okay, I mean, probably this guy doesn't have a huge background and, he doesn't know a lot of people, so maybe we can help. And so we emailed Ed headquarters to get us in touch.
Yeah.
And they did. So we met. And then we also met another guy who wanted to do the same thing. And he was actually a professional from the event industry, let's say. So we had three groups, the expats, the students, and a professional from event industry.
Yeah.
And we managed to pull it off.
So you guys collaborated, the three groups got together. That's interesting. That's actually very nice. It's a nice collaboration.
Really funny of you to say that because collaboration was the theme of the first event.
Boom. Yeah, but let's first of all, right, hat tip. I didn't realize you were like in the first one already.
Yeah.
You're a veteran of
TEDx.
The
first one in Poland, I think.
When was that?
The event happened on March 5th, I believe, 2010. We met on summer 2009, during summer 2009. Okay. But it took us a couple of months to, execute that. Our first idea during first meeting, I suppose that might have been June when we met. And our first idea was, okay, let's do this in September. And then, you know, a couple of weeks went by and things did not look very well. So, okay, let's postpone a little.
Adam, this is not a barbecue. Yeah. You don't chuck a few like sausages together and get together for a TEDx.
Yeah, so the license number was 56, I believe, worldwide for TEDx Warsaw.
And I don't expect you to have all the detail, but like, how did it ripple out to the rest of Poland?
So each event is independently organized. Yeah. As I said, the tagline specifies that. Yeah. So just like in Warsaw, there was a group of people who wanted to do this. It turned out that Warsaw is not, you know, exclusive city.
Yeah, it's not the center of the world, guys.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So in Krakow, in Gdańsk, in Wrocław, in Poznań, there were other people who wanted to do this. And also smaller cities like Koszalin, for example. And in Warsaw, there are also other events organized by other groups of people, other TEDx events. Mm-hmm. And actually, Warsaw is kind of strange for the city of this size to have so few events. Because in London and New York, you have dozens. And obviously, they differ in size, they differ in quality, but there is many more than just like one TEDx New York, for example, or TEDx London. There are many more events. There are university events, there are high school events, there are like district events or in the names, right? And like I said, they differ in size, they differ in quality. Typically, over the years, we see that the ones which stay are mostly the TEDx city names, right?
Mm-hmm. But, it feels official.
Yeah, yeah. And but yeah, there are many more. And basically, anyone can organize an event. So you can do that in your home if you wish. Technically, there is no requirement to have it in a public space. So it can be like for 20 people, and just maybe not just your friends, but the license does not exclude that. And you can do that on a national stadium and for like 10,000 people. And event like that happened in TEDx Rio de la Plata in Argentina, and similar size events happened in Sao Paulo as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to shift focus to the lady. It was International Women's Day, right?
And that's the only reason
we are mansplaining to you here what TEDx is. So, Rino, how did you get involved in this? Like.
Yeah, so for me, that started actually a while earlier. So I started organizing events when I was 16. So we had Peace Corps volunteers from the US coming to Ukraine teaching English, and they did summer camps technically they were teaching us to speak English, but the actual idea behind it was to teach leadership and to give, especially to kids in the smaller areas, not the big towns, who normally would not have access to resources or project management tools or kits, to teach them how to do that. So they were organized summer schools and it would be called a summer camp, an English summer camp. So you would go to an English summer camp, but the agenda was built in such a way that you would acquire leadership skills in the process or project management skills. So I got involved in that as a participant because I was moving to the US for a year on exchange. So I just went for a summer camp just to see what it's like to improve my English before going. And it turned out to be a leadership camp. And then years later, I started being part of the organizing team and I did that for another 4 years. Then I organized events in ISAC, so the biggest student organization.
Yeah.
So I did that for a while. And then after I was done with ISAC and I came back to Warsaw in 2000, I think it was 16 or so. And I just thought, what can I do? And I've been watching TED videos for quite a while. And I thought, wait, there's got to be a local team who does this. So I just went on the website and it said, contact us if you want to join the team. So I dropped a note and then Adam reached out to me actually. And he said, let's meet up for coffee. So we met up for coffee. And then basically I told him what I just told you. And he said, okay, so what do you want to do? And I think that's a big part of it. So it was kind of, do you have an idea for this? So the first year, it was 2016, I think, when I joined. And it was more, I was trying to get a couple of people from other TEDx's to come to our events, just to, not even to benchmark, but rather just to see, to have some connections. And we actually had somebody from Italy or something like that. And basically just moving chairs around and being somebody who helps around. And then after the event, we were having a conversation and I said, like, do we have somebody who takes care of the actual experience?
At the actual event,
At the actual event, like actual event experience. And Adam asked me, do you want to do it? And I said, sure. And actually, that's how I became the head of event experience at TEDx Warsaw. So it was, we just talked that there was a need for that. And then because the need was there, it seemed to just make sense to do that. So we did that on a smaller scale during the event in 2017, then 18, and it was growing a bit. But I felt that it wasn't enough because we would take the event as it was and then would add elements of event experience into the overall thing. So for example, we would put yoga things in the foyer. We would put some robots or something in FYE, but these things were disconnected. So
yeah, you're sprinkling.
Yeah, yeah, it was basically putting glitter around.
Nothing wrong with glitter.
Absolutely nothing wrong with glitter.
In the right context.
But in that case, I just felt like we could do better than that. And mm-hmm. it really felt that there is a need to do a complex event, to do something that really makes sense together. And that's where I thought of you, actually. And then since we talked, had that conversation, Element Talk, I was just thinking, hey, I met this guy. He's at Deloitte, so probably he won't be interested. But let me drop a note. So I spent 6 months going back and forth, thinking about sending you an email. And then finally I sent it. And then actually, funny enough, that worked out quite well so far.
And boom. And
here and, we are.
Yeah, it seemed like such a great idea. And I can see the frown on Adam's face.
That's like, his happy face.
Why did it happen?
That's his happy face.
My frown on my face might be a result of a meeting during which Irina stated that she doesn't feel it. the way that we're doing it right now, so she wanted to change it, yeah. But she has no idea how.
Yeah.
And I at that point I was certain this will take some time.
Thanks for that promotion though, and that was the ad break in the podcast. So there is something that binds all these events together, no matter what. I'm sharing ideas.
Ideas were spreading.
The person who steps onto that red circle needs to share an idea. Now, how do you guys find these people who step on these circles?
That's changed over the years.
Yeah, that's like Irina said, it mm-hmm. changed over the years. So first couple of years, it was typically just that the team sat down and okay, who do you want to see? And the people we know from media, the people we know personally, the ideas that we want to hear about, mm-hmm. and then let's find some names that could tell us a story about those issues. But as the time progressed, we gradually switched more and more to open auditions format.
Oh wow! So you can pitch for your spot.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So the first year we did that, a couple people like that ended up on stage. This year, it's most of them.
I mean, I find TED, the brand, appealing. And of course, it scares the hell out of me thinking to step on that circle. For other people, it's probably not as scary. But the fact that you have so many volunteers to step in and say, okay, cool, I want to do this and come and actually...
They don't know what they sign up for.
That's the next thing, right? I kind of got a peek behind the curtain. I want to talk about that too. But like, what do you think is it? What draws these guys to this? Is it the brand or the exposure they'll get? Or?
For some of them, it's definitely fame or the perception of fame.
I don't want to speak for them because I have not done extensive interviews with them about the motivation for speaking on our stage. What I can suppose is that for some it's exposure, certainly. For some, they want to challenge themselves with speaking at such a stage and the entire preparation process, which, like I said, typically they're not aware of at the very beginning, and that it takes so mm-hmm. much time. And then, I don't know, in some cases it might be also that someone else pushes them to do so. Because especially in the earlier years, we had also possibility to nominate someone. Mm. So you didn't want to speak yourself, but you knew someone who might have a cool idea to share on stage. So you could say, okay, contact this guy or contact this lady, and she might be really good, a fit for you. And it went different ways with them. Sometimes they were excited. Sometimes they were scared of doing it. But some of them ended up on stage also.
This is something I would love to do one day. Would you like to be on the circle?
Personally, I never felt the need to. And also, I don't think I have, ideas which maybe not worth spreading, but developed enough to be spread.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it this way.
For me, I like to eventually, but I really would like to make sure that I have something to say. So it's more of that.
I'm with you. I think it's like, I don't think I'm ready for that, first of all. Also, the fact is that I think it binds really close to the brand is that you want to give a gift to the audience.
I think it really also depends on the personal motivation, because we have some of the jokes inside the team that people, some of the speakers added as line on their LinkedIn profile, TEDx Warsaw speaker. So, I mean,
TEDx speaker.
And
some of them also, don't really understand the difference between TED and TEDx. So if they poke at TEDx, I'm a TED speaker now.
Yeah.
You hear the little water drop. Yes. Yeah.
So it really depends on why the person comes into this, you know, and what they're trying to what kind of message they're trying to pass. So like what we're saying now is, do we have ideas developed enough or that the impact that actually matters versus I want to promote myself? So it really depends on the motivation.
A lot of people who nominate themselves, they are the type of people who just look for no exposure and they don't really have an idea beyond promoting themselves. So,
and also we have some watch outs, like the personal coaches. Like it's
personal development and the stuff is most of those guys. Well, most of the self nominations come from those guys.
One thing that I did see, so I kind of saw TEDx, and the first thing that I saw TEDx as a friend of mine who actually went and spoke on the circle in one of the other countries. And she went through a transformation during the process, because people do not realize that this is not something like old school. I'm going to put my slides together 2 days before the event and then slap on something and get, you guys go through a process. Now, Adam, I'm looking at you because I know you're also embedded there. Like what does it take to be a TEDx speaker?
Okay, so it will vary from event to event. Like I said, you can do one in your flat, you can do one in a national stadium, and the processes will differ greatly between those events. So worst case scenario, worst from the quality probably or expected quality is what you just said, that you get some time on stage, you do it on yourself. And I believe there are TEDx events which do it this way. But I also suppose that they switch quickly after the first event to a more curated process. So at TEDx Warsaw, it typically takes around a quarter, 3 months to fully develop a speech, a talk. And the people that are involved are obviously the speaker, himself or herself. But then you also have a guide who, like the name says, guides you through the process. And basically that's like a conversation partner. It doesn't have to be a public speaking coach or anything. It needs to be an intelligent person who can challenge your ideas, who can show some holes in the narration, who can ask, okay, do we need to use the jargon here? Or maybe we can explain it in a different way. And then you also have professional public speaking coaches and workshops with them, both on the structure of the talk, on storytelling, on breathing, which is important when you want to talk.
Man, so this, like you say, it's a 3 month process that you go through, right?
Yeah, but it's not like you don't spend the entire 3 months.
Not for
like,
sure, yeah.
If you pack all that time together, that would be around 40 hours,
I suppose. That's actually quite valuable, right? You walk away with some...
Well, it is from a perspective of ending this process. But at the beginning of the journey, most of the speakers look at it as a waste of time.
Resistance.
So they don't... I mean, why do I need to do this? Especially as people who are actually pretty good speakers, but in a different setting, like university professors or businessmen who do a lot of public speaking, but they have a certain format, way of speaking, and it doesn't really fit on our stage. And you can feel it, that you have a so you have a speaker who is suited well for this stage, or way in which he speaks or she speaks on our stage, and then a professor, let's say, comes in from university, and you know he puts his notes on the table, which should not be on stage, next stage actually, and then he starts reading the notes, and I mean, or from slides. So, but these are the things that you try to push away from stage during the process. And also, since we work with speakers quite extensively. Maybe not because of that, but anyway, we have this disclosure that we can say no to a speaker quite late before the event, when we see some red flag shows up. Okay, so that person might do something we don't want that person to do. And anyway, even if they do that on stage, we are not supposed to post that online.
I'm just sitting thinking here. I'm going like, if that I ever get invited, I'll probably have to work on my slides, because I'm from a consultancy firm and we tend to put the whole Bible on one slide with clip art.
Have no slides at all.
Ooh, man, that is one of my personal challenges to myself, is to one day, because I feel sometimes we use slides as crutches, right?
As crutches. That's an interesting one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, many people do that. But if you really have a good idea and your story is well thought through, then you don't need slides, typically. Because, you know, slides, they need to add value to the talk. Otherwise, they only take focus off of you.
Exactly. I think that happens a lot, right? Because people suddenly look at the screen or at the small screen because you're really boring.
Yeah.
I'm Instagramming my mom.
Yeah, so there are several cases that slides can be valuable for a talk. So if you have some complex idea to explain and it's really better, easier, faster to show it on screen as a image, for example, if you have a map or a complex graph, or you need to show some animation, how data changes, for example, to use Hans Rosling's case, right?
Yeah.
That's a great example, great case.
So anything that can support your narrative a little bit and keep the narrative.
Well, not anything. Yeah. Something that can greatly support your narrative.
Not photos of your children and your mom.
So if that supports the narrative.
Yeah.
I think it's also important about the duration because the TED Talks, it's between roughly 3 minutes and up to 20 minutes or so, right?
18
minutes.
That's a maximum. And typically now the talks that you see currently during the events, they're rather between 10 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the best speeches are shorter.
Yeah.
There are really great speeches which last three or six minutes.
Man, you know, I must say, like, I didn't think of that because the time duration, we tend to forget. I mean, I did an event recently on stage where I had half an hour. I was sweating.
Yeah, I don't remember who that was, but whoever said that, sorry that I wrote you a long letter. I didn't have enough time to write the short one.
It's attributed to Mark Twain.
Mark Twain, yeah. So it's a bit like that.
So there are different ways to approach the, exact wording of your talk. But many TED speakers, that's not talking about TED speakers, they memorize it word by word. So this way they have total control over what is being said, but it has a dark side, let's say. If you don't memorize it well enough, it sounds robotic. It sounds like as if a machine was doing that on stage. But if done well enough, it's really great because the words really flow from your mind.
You personally feel comfortable, right?
Yes. It gives you space to have an actual conversation, an actual connection with your audience.
Yeah.
And like I said, the words just flow from your mind. Mm-hmm. You don't really remember them at that point. They just come out.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you can look into eye to, you know, one or two or three people in the audience and have a connection with them. And the emotions at that point are really on a different level.
I actually find it with this actual damn podcast, right? If I have to record a voiceover or something beforehand, I go, I know what I want to say. I'm just going to be all natural and talk. Mm-hmm. 15,000 takes later, right? Because but the thing is, it's funny, in the human mind, like I go through it. I'm actually working on a project now where I have to do recordings. And what they're also 15 million takes, but I'm too lazy to write it down and practice it before I do the recording. Do you find that this is something that is that the resistance you're talking about when you start training these people? It's like, hey, I'm confident. I can go talk this thing. It's no problem.
The problem is that those speakers typically don't have time limits. And on our stage, they do. And that's the game changer. Because, you know, halfway through, they realize they only covered 10% of the topic.
Yeah.
And that's when the stress kicks in. The process is so that it won't happen on stage, right? But if you don't have the process, it happens on stage.
Yeah, so I've seen it. I also think what's happened to me a few times is you go on stage and you talk and then they say the timing is bad and then they go, you're 5 minutes shorter. And I think when you know your talk, you're able to actually...
It's also best to plan two endings. One, you know, shorter, and then you have some extra stuff which might dig deeper into the topic that you are discussing and have that planned at the very end of your talk. So if you run out of time, okay, you just cut it off. And if you do have a couple more minutes, then you have actually valuable stuff that you can discuss, right?
Yeah.
Maybe otherwise it can be discussed during Q&A session. For example,
let's leave one tip. So, I mean, you actually gave me advice the other day, and I'll share it too if you don't mention it. But is there something that you would advise a speaker to do that they can implement tomorrow that's going to help their style?
Okay, so you might have heard about the Dunning-Kruger effect. And this is basically the relationship between a knowledge of an area and confidence in it. So at the very beginning, you know nothing and you have zero confidence in that. Then you get to know a little bit about the topic, and your confidence skyrockets. So, you know it all, basically. And that's one of the reasons why in Poland everyone is an expert on politics, on football, on many other topics. And I suppose not only in Poland.
You might have to cut that out.
So you basically know that football exists. You might know the rules, and you've watched the last, match, and then you know it all, right? So that's the rationale why you can ramble on the internet or whatever about this topic. But then, when you get to know a little bit more, you realize how much more there actually is to know, and your confidence plummets. It goes almost to zero. And at that point, you really have, I mean, this is also the PhD point, for example, right? When you're doing some really good science, and then you realize how much more there is to know. The point is to, still keep learning and increase your knowledge of the area, and then slowly but surely your confidence grows. It never reaches the point that you had at the very beginning.
That overconfidence.
But that's also good, because it also shows that you understand that there is still room to grow.
So that's a good space to be, right?
And also, this is exactly the point where you want to be when you give a talk. You want your confidence to be growing, but also still be open to new knowledge.
I like that. Boom, that's down.
Professor Feynman, he's the author of quite a few of these famous books, and he was a mathematician and physician, if I'm not mistaken. And what he used to say is, if you can't explain it to a five-year-old or three-year-old, you don't understand it. And if I was to give a tip, I'd say when you practice for the talk, to actually practice a 3-minute version of your talk, a 5-minute version of the talk, a 10-minute version of your talk. And that will require a lot of effort, but to have those different versions of what you want to say.
I always said to some of my colleagues, go and take this presentation or this thing that you're doing and present it to your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. I mean, the fact that I'm still married is a miracle, because I've done it a few times where I take a design, my wife's also a designer, I take a presentation I've done, super proud of it, stand in front of her and start presenting. And then the questions start flying in. And because I'm a weakling, I get angry. Because why can't she understand this? But it's probably the most revealing thing is to do that, right?
And it's also extremely valuable. But what I'm learning as well, especially in Proctor, because there's a number of times I need to pitch something. And I work in supply chain, so it's something completely different. But there's the part where you really have people from different functions. There is, and also, I mean, in our office, we have 40 nationalities. So when you present the same idea to people and you have five people from my team, we have five different nationalities in the same team, each person picks up on a different aspect.
Yeah, people are different. Remember, we spoke about this. You think it's also when you do podcasting, your videos online, and it's something I'm going to be doing when I get on stage again, is you actually need to focus on one person. Also, like, I knew that was relevant to podcasting. Like, I'm speaking to one person. Yeah, you listening. This is us talking to you. But you should actually be doing that on stage too. You focus on that, not on looking at one person like a deer in car lights, but
one person at a time.
One person at a time. But your message is for that one person. Credit to Adam. It's powerful. Thanks, Adam.
No problem.
I just want to talk a little bit about TEDx Warsaw 2019. Theme.
The theme is dare.
What can I expect? I mean, you're going to dare, like, I'm going to be walking out feeling what?
The way we've approached this, we went through the event design process this time, actually with you. So another commercial break here. Thank you very much. What we've decided about the audience is we wanted to focus on three behaviors that we wanted to work on. First of all, we wanted people to go from looking at their phones and being distracted by things that are going on to being focused, to actually Googling what's going on or to looking for more information. So actually the first change that we would like to happen is more from this being everywhere at the same time to being present, to really being in the moment and to taking in the message that is being given to you, whether that is from the stage or whether that is from a conversation you're having with other people at the event. The second thing we wanted to focus on was when you're entering and you're feeling shy and not confident, and then when you're leaving, you're feeling part of the community and connected. So what we were thinking here in that context is, instead of adding more things, how can we remove the obstacles that would prevent very cool people who we invite to the event from actually interacting and taking advantage of it? And then the last one, which is actually my favorite, is when people come in, there are a lot of aspects, and not everybody knows that TEDx is not just talks. It's also things that happen around the talks, and especially the conversations that you have with people in the foyer during the breaks, or especially during the party, for example. Mm. It's these conversations where you talk about ideas, which is the cue you see people's eyes shining when they do that, which is so cool. And this last part is you come in and there's just a lot. There are a lot of stimuli, and there's a lot of this excited. You're excited to be there, but you do feel lost. And what we would like to do with that is to take that element of chaos and order and play with that a bit and see how we can get from excited and lost to excited about being lost. So we'd like to do that.
Practically speaking, I want to attend Warsaw, TEDx Warsaw 2019. How do I, is there still space? Can I still apply?
Definitely. So the event itself happens on 13th of June and the registration on 16th of March. It's not the first come, first serve. It's not the process that, you know. For the past 9 years, we have chosen our audience based mostly on the question, why me? Mm-hmm. And that's an open question, obviously. And whoever applies for an admission needs to convince us that they are worthy of attending. But actually what the person reading an application should feel is, whoa, I want to talk with that person. That's a cool individual that may broaden my perspectives. And we also will ask our applicants this year to do the same, because this year the applicants themselves will vote.
So I'll be able to vote.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Obviously,
okay.
No names included.
Yeah, yeah.
But you will see the industry, the position, and the answers to open questions. And you have two votes out of for every five people that you will see.
Actually, one of the huge values of an event like this is that you really mix people. So it's not a conference for people who work in business. It's not a conference for people who work
all over the place.
Yeah, it's an event. It is all over the place. And you can really have, you know, somebody who's a student of biotech with somebody who's the named biotech with somebody who has a biotech startup in the same room, and they wouldn't be even aware of it. So, I mean, before when we were reading applications, I know 2 years ago, 3 years ago, because each one of us, each application would be read by two or three people. So we really put time and effort into this, and we would have...
Well, two or three have to vote yes.
Two or three have to vote
more.
Yeah, true. But I mean, like there's this, and I think what's important about this is also for the participants to be able to see the caliber of people that are coming together, and the possibility to who you can actually connect with and what kind of conversations you can have. And that's why we would like to hear why me. And actually, it's not about, you know, I wouldn't fully agree on the whole being worthy to come to the event.
Yeah, that's
but
like, you know, sarcastic. Yeah.
Guy thinks. But no, but it's really about actually showing how cool the people are and why. Yeah.
Just to explain a little bit more about the worthiness. So like Irina said, it's not about being worthy. It's about being the right fit for the crowd.
Yeah. Yes,
because
exactly.
If you have, for example, 100 really cool students, we cannot accommodate them all. We just need, let's say, 50 of them, right? So we need to choose. And you can be an absolutely extraordinary person and yet not get invited simply because too many similar in some characteristic individuals applied. Similarly, with one company, we don't want this to be a company event. So if 100 people from one company apply and they are all really cool, we cannot invite them all because that will be just company's event.
It makes sense. How many people are you going to get let in at the end? Like, have you decided on a cap?
Yeah, so our venue for this year can hold 500 people.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. Can you talk about the venue yet or not yet?
I would rather not. I want it to be more
awesome.
Of a surprise. What I can say is that it will be a new one. We haven't been there yet, and it gives us far more possibilities.
The event, the venue itself is part of an experience as well. And it is, for us at least, it's a dare.
Where do I apply for tickets?
TEDxWarsaw.org.
.org. You guys have been doing this now for a little while. What are some of the craziest stuff that's happened? Like, it could be something that's gone wrong. Can you tell us a little bit of behind the scenes, like sneak peek?
Okay, so probably two of the biggest fuck-ups we had were with registration. One during the very first event and the other one just last year. They were both available, and actually we handled, I suppose, the first one better. Last year, well... Let's not dig into that. But so I can share another story, another fuck up that I had.
Throw it.
Apart from the main TEDx Warsaw events, we also did some smaller events. Mm-hmm. Like I, for example, ran TEDx Youth at Warsaw, which was mostly for high school students. Mm-hmm. And we also did some TEDx Warsaw Salon events, which are typically shorter in the evening. And the coolest of those, at least when it comes to the venue, was on the Parade Square, which is right in front of the Palace of Science and Culture, in the very heart of the city, done in cooperation with Bar Studio there. So the venue was great, the weather was great, and that was crucial because it was outdoors. And on the palace, if you haven't seen it, then you can Google the place, especially how it is lit at night.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can also do is you can display something in a way that you backlit the windows in the palace, and we did an X on the side. Yeah, but anyway, so the venue was really impressive, really cool, and everyone was very pumped about the event. What was not so impressive were the speeches, were the talks.
Actually, I was there and I walked out.
Yeah. Okay, and
so how do you
that
feel?
That was before I joined. That was before
and
I joined.
And the reason why was because we did not rehearse enough.
Okay.
So I wanted to emphasize that one more time, that you need, if you want to have a really great event, you need to rehearse, like, you know, the late night shows in the States do. And it was not rehearsed on two levels, both the speeches themselves and entire narration arc between the speeches, how they fit together. Because even though, okay, so there were four speeches, one of them was really good, the three were flops. But even though they were flops, if I arranged them in a different order, they would work much better.
Yeah.
And I only understood that once I saw them all together.
That's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can do a rehearsal with all your speakers together, do that by all means.
I think it's brilliant. Like, just to recap, because I want to mention it again. Narrative arc of the whole thing, important. And then the second lesson is that if you have a shitty event, a shitty setup, because I don't want to offend Adam, even backlighting the Palace of Culture is not going to save it. And I think there's a design thing.
You need to have some cool content, and then you can build on that.
Yeah.
Not the other way around.
We have this bad saying, I don't know if you have it in Poland. I think there's a Polish equivalent. It's like putting lipstick on a pig.
Yeah.
Not going to work. Okay, Irina.
Yeah, so for me, actually, it would be something that I learned from the events over the years. Not only with TEDx, but that there needs to be, actually, with this narration arc is one part, but there needs to be one big picture for the whole event.
Yeah.
And everything that you do, I think it's good to have one filter question is, does this support the event that I'm building? And if the answer is no, you can park it, you can leave it for the next year, you can give that idea to somebody else to execute, but whatever you do in the context of your event, it needs to support the main thing that you're creating. And if it doesn't support it, then don't do it. And simple as that. And even if somebody really excited, and even if there's somebody who really wants to execute it, if it doesn't support the main theme of the event, it's glitter and it's not the good kind. And I think on this one as well, that's why it's really important that you have, in fact, maybe the main thing that I've learned over the years, that main thing of doing the event is sitting down and thinking, like, what is this really about? And what we talked in the beginning about changing the behaviors and this whole of excited but lost versus excited about being lost is what I'm doing. Is this action that we're doing, this activity that we're creating in a foyer, this interaction around the talk, does it support that change in behavior? And to really have that one structure. And I think that's actually really crucial, that you have at least one or two people who take care of seeing the whole picture of the event, what everybody's doing, the volunteers and so on, and making sure that whatever we do, it's in one picture, it's in one image, it's not a couple of different, it's not a slideshow.
The thing is, we've gone through the event design process aligned with design thinking. We still need to gauge the impact that it will have ultimately on the experience at the event. But what value have you taken out of this process, if any?
Okay, so for me, there were 3 points, basically, and I will try to keep it short. So first is that I like to have a structure to things, especially something as a creative process. So having a structure to the creative process was really helpful for me, just, you know, to understand what are the points and what we need to do first, what's next, what's coming, just to have an understanding of entire of all the blocks that you need to move in that. The second thing is that I understood better the team's understanding of the event, of the theme, of how they think, and that's really helpful when you talk with them, when you discuss certain ideas that you have for the event. And that comes mostly from the LEGO Serious Play workshop that we did together. And then, there are times when you feel that your ideas are shitty. really. And they might be, let's be honest here. So what this this process gave me is trust in the process. So you need to push through, okay? You will have shitty ideas for sure. What you need to do is push through that phase that you have, and then something shiny will come out of the pile, let's say.
I think your comment on trusting the process, I think that sometimes we forget that in design, is that there is, you should work towards a process and then push through. And I think, you know, Adam, like we were standing sometimes looking at this and go like, there's some shitty ideas here. But the way you just put the effort in and working in it, and I think there's some gems, and we'll see if we can execute. And for you.
Yeah, so for me, actually, one of the first things I learned, and something that I took from TEDx into my working life as well, and actually that I learned from Adam, from you, and it was what you talked about in context of the TEDx Singapore and working as a village, and that most mistakes happen not in a particular area of expertise of the given person, but where the areas meet. So to give you a tangible example, we have the group that takes care of the registrations and the badges. We have the group who takes care of the speakers. Who takes care of the badges for the speakers? Or who takes care of the badges for speakers plus one? So it's these little things. But actually the problems, at least also I can see in work environment, are not within the level of competence of a particular person, but in those areas in between. And I've started paying a lot more attention to that, actually, in my personal life as well. And it's interesting how valuable the people are who are able to notice the connections between the areas, because you have experts, like subject matter experts in different things, but actually being able to understand the interconnections and what can go wrong there, I think that's huge value, especially in the context of our event. So that's one thing that I learned. Another thing actually with the ideas is the idea of creative confidence, and what David Kelly, I think it was the book, the guy who created IDEO and the D School in Stanford, about that you don't have to be a designer by profession. And that's actually a lot of people who take courses in Stanford and then in different programs, be it business or tech and so on. And they would take classes from the D School where they would practice how to introduce elements of human-centered design into the work they're doing. And I think that's what we were doing here. It was with people coming in from completely different backgrounds. And a curious thing for me with this process and working with you is that we took people as, there's a lawyer, there is somebody who works, like you are more, let's say, business background, same here for me. We have some people who are just creative, some who are freelancers. And you take all these people together and you put them through the design process, and things that come out are extremely interesting because of our different backgrounds. So it's also curious that you don't have to be the designer to go through the work. You need to have somebody who can take you through the process. So I agree on that. And then just personal development. I think the whole process for me has been a dare, because even introducing you into our team and saying, you know what, it's what you said before, like, I'm not going to do this event if we do it the way we've always done it. I really think it needs to be a cohesive, cohesive, complex thing that we really know what we're doing. We have one bigger picture. That's a dare for me, you know, saying that like the buck stops with me, like I'm not going to do it differently. And okay, I didn't know how to solve that at that time. We're kind of figuring that out. And it's curious because this idea of chaos, and for me, it is excited about being lost, that I might not know how we're going to get there. And it's kind of connected to the trust the process. Yeah. But I don't have to know these things myself. I can find people who can help me along that journey, because there are things that I'm good at and I can play to my strengths, and then I can find people who are good at other things and play to their strengths.
I'm really looking forward to TEDx 2019 Warsaw to kick some ass, and let's see what happens. But let's move into a few shorter things. Because Adam, you're a closet designer, dude. I mean, for you listening to this, this guy arrived with a whole ton of badges from different events. And the thing is, I never thought about event badges, like but why did you bring these things here, Adam?
All right. So I have here badges from several events, as Berlin mentioned. One group of those badges is badges from, let's say, general events.
These tags you get at the door. I always lose mine at the first coffee station.
The most crucial characteristic of them all is that, like, at least 1/3, if not 2/3, of the badge are covered in logos and name of the event. And your name is in a really small font. If you walk like 2 meters back from that person, you can't really read the name.
Yeah.
It's not great for connection, especially in Poland, here where people are not great networkers. So we want to push them a little to break the ice help them break the ice easier. So what we do actually is that we have a cleaner design without all the logos on the front side and a huge name.
That's the first thing you see is Adam.
That's the thing that stands out. I would even make it bigger if it wasn't for people like Małgorzata or Federico, who have longer names.
Damn you, Poland.
And, you know, they just won't fit horizontally, basically. Yeah. Another thing that you might notice if you take a closer look is that the surname is not really below the name. It's on the side. It's it's written vertically.
Oh, I see.
And you only really use it when you work at registration desk.
You know?
Yeah, so you just sort through and you look, you have those badges placed on the side and you just look for the name, surnames. And then typically there is just one person of the surname. And even if there is more than one, just a couple. So it's really easy to find that.
So even the name badges are designed like...
To help people interact during the event. And on the back side, you have agenda of the event. So you don't really need an extra piece of paper to print that on. It's rather small, but then again, you can read it with an ease.
I like
that. It's close.
Man, I always like, because I'm the useless guy at events. I lose my tag and I always lose the program and I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, so what I would really like to do with those badges by taking it to them to the next level is to make them a really cool memorabilia, because for me they are, because I designed them, so I have some personal connection with them, and I believe some people still also have that. But what I've seen at least one other TEDx event is that each year they design it completely anew. They don't probably follow the same process that we have, but they are like toys. So, for example, it's really hard to explain, but one of the badges they had was a circle. So you don't really see a circular ID badges, right?
No. Yeah.
And it also rotated. So there were two plates connected in the middle.
Okay. Yeah.
So on the front side you had all your details, and on the back side there was agenda, but there was just a small window cut out.
So you can spin it.
Yeah. So you can spin and see what comes next. So it focuses your attention just on one next thing that comes up.
So can we expect something special for this year, Adam?
Not sure yet, because when it comes to registration, we already discussed one special thing, right? That the applicants themselves will choose the audience, not us, not the team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. Another thing we have planned for the pickup, budget pickup.
Yeah.
We will see how this works. We don't yet have a cool idea for the budgets themselves.
So we're looking forward to seeing that. And if you have any trouble finding your tag or you're not impressed with your tag, Adam's details will be in the show notes below. Irina, you're also a closet designer. What is your design activities? Tell me more.
I think I do a lot of experimenting on myself in terms of lifestyle design, actually. And it's rather, it's from simple things of how to organize my day, or actually, I would describe that as creating opportunity for serendipity. Because I would put these blocks of time. So an example, every couple of Sundays I have a no people day. And it's
a no people day.
And it's a day when I don't meet anybody I know. And I just go into a town and I just get lost and I wander around and I end up in a coffee shop usually. And I end up talking to random people. And one of these no people days ended up being a meeting with a fashion designer when I wandered into a boutique and we talked for 3 hours and then drank wine and then I left. So it's just creating.
That's great. I like that.
And it's just time for me to actually to restart a bit and to rethink how things are. Also, no people days is when I tend to take books with me. And since I speak multiple languages, I would take books in multiple languages. So I would read and it triggers. So I would read something in Russian, in Polish, in Ukrainian, in English and so on. I'm trying with Spanish, but it's a lot of effort. So this is kind of I would do tests on myself in terms of how can I do things better or differently.
So you're designing your life. I like that.
Gather around, kids. It's story time.
This is how it works. You're going to read the challenge to Irina, Adam, and then Irina needs to tell a story based on that challenge. Sure. It could be true, it could be a lie, but it's always good to have some truth. And then you'll do the same to Adam. And it kind of takes the responsibility of me. Did you see what I did there?
Absolutely.
Okay, so Adam, fire away. You can just sit back here behind my little dead cat.
All right, Irina, so here's your challenge.
Tell me.
Tell a story about something that you have lost or have found.
It's connected to TEDx. So before last year's event, it was about 6 months earlier, I wrote a little note to myself, like a letter into the future. And it was kind of what I wished would happen. And I would write it in a style of like, today is this and this day, but you're already like, you're the day after the event. You're on the 23rd of March and you know how it all went. And then I wrote a bunch of things that I wanted to happen. I wrote a bunch of things about the team or about actually how I wanted things to go and so on. And I completely forgot about that. That was just in the back of one of my Moleskines because I write pretty much daily. And then I completely forgot about that. And then at the end of the year, I usually do a wrap up. So I went through my notes and I opened, if you open a Moleskine notebook, there is this pocket in the back.
Yeah.
So I took out the note and I started reading it. And I was thinking like, wow, like actually most of these things really did happen.
That's awesome. That's a great story.
And actually, funny enough, one of them was I wanted to become friends with you. So that didn't happen last year, but hopefully we're on the way there now.
Yeah, I'm also working hard on it, but it's a tough nut to crack.
So, cuenta algo por lo que te sientas agradecido.
English, please.
Tell about something you're grateful for.
I guess I'm grateful that I was born in Poland, that I can live here, because I believe this is a really great place where creative things can happen. A place which is somewhere in the middle when it comes, you know, to income, for example, for given individual. So you can see what's ahead, where, you know, United States is where West is. You can see how bad it could be. We're not, for example, living 30 years back, right, under the communist regime. And you have plenty of possibilities that that you can choose from. So that's, I believe, would be what I'm grateful for.
I love that. Let's stay positive, right? Do you turn to mentors or find inspiration to keep you going?
Yeah, so actually I do two things. And I think I started about a couple of years ago. So I was struggling to find mentors in my immediate environment. So that's how I started listening to podcasts. Actually, there are a couple of particular shows that I listen to regularly. And it's funny that for example, the Tim Ferriss show.
Good one.
Which is, I mean, it's one. But
it's the one.
Yeah, it's the one. And I've been listening to that for about 3-4 years now. If you hear a lot of people who are successful distilling little bits here and there, it does go into your subconscious and somehow it builds on that and it grows in the moments when you need it, especially when it comes to clarity of thinking. I think that's the main thing, learning how to think better. So that's great. from the podcast. And then now work-wise, I do have certain people who are in higher level positions within Procter who I turn to whenever I need to make a decision.
Did you seek them out? Or?
Yeah, I actively seek out mentors.
Good insight. Adam, and you, like, what keeps you going? What inspires you? Do you have mentors?
So I believe I have similar experience as Irina with difficulties to find mentors in immediate environment that I operate within. One thing that I would add, because I also listen to some podcasts like Minimalists, for example. Mm-hmm. One thing I would add is simply books. Just recently, I'm reading Nicholas the Taleb.
That's right? Good. Yeah. So, the Black Swan.
Okay, so Skin in the Game by good. Nassim Nicholas Taleb, right? So yeah, that's obviously the same author as the Black Swan, and the idea might be familiar to you. What I really like about this author is how honest and direct he is with his readers. And obviously the thinking he shows, you might not agree with everything that he writes, right? And it just shows you in which direction your thinking can go. Even if you don't agree with the guy, it's really great to, and probably that's the only way to grow, actually, to be faced with ideas you would not think about and you may not agree with.
And I think that's the problem we have in the world at the moment, if I can get really philosophical, is that we're not willing to actually, I mean, I don't think this is as extreme, but we're not really willing to look at other people's perspectives sometimes. We're not willing to give it a listen.
Actually, building on that, there's some also great resources for actually how to think better and to make sure that you're making better decisions, in fact. There's good resources like Farnham Street. They write some really good pieces about that. This building blocks of knowledge is actually coming from there. There is Wait But Why, which has great pieces and like interviews with Elon Musk. They're really long, but they're really good quality content. Yeah. Melting Asphalt is a good collection of reflection pieces and so on. So those are some of the really good ones.
You've snuck off to go fetch a book. What are you reading?
I'm reading 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos by Jordan B. Peterson. I spend a lot of time on trying to understand myself better and to see things I like and don't like and also understand human behavior in general and then to design for that.
It's really interesting, like both you guys like just brought this out, and this is something I had an interview with someone earlier this week where we were talking about broader experience design. But he said that for him, to become a better designer and designer of transformational experiences, the first thing he started working on was himself. Mm-hmm. And it feels like, yeah, you're trying to improve yourself, but ultimately that impact will then ripple out to other people.
I mean, and also like looping this back to TEDx. I mean, the reason we are volunteers and we're doing this because this is interesting. I mean, this to an extent.
Yeah, you guys are personally growing through this experience of putting TEDx together itself, right?
I mean, considering if you think of these conscious, aware individuals who know what they're doing and choosing, and we go into this because we see something in it for us. And also, actually, for this year, as if I could summarize the thing, but we want to create a space for thoughtful disagreement. And I think like now there's a lot of discussion about safe spaces and negative or positive, but I think what Adam just mentioned about being exposed to things that you might not agree with, but whether you have that, we would like to create a space where you would actually give yourself, where you would ask, but why would they think that? You know, so your first reaction is not that stupid, or like you can think that's stupid, but also leave a little bit of space for maybe there's something about it that I don't know, or maybe there is something about it that I don't understand. And if we can, basically we're creating a space where that's how you behave by design, you know?
Great. So people want to stalk you guys personally and TEDx. Can we repeat, where are you active social media wise? If they want to get hold of you, what would be the best way?
I'm on Facebook, so that's definitely one way. And another one, I have a developing blog. So it's a standard WordPress, but it's if you type in Luli Mpalo, you will find me. And basically,
okay, no one's ever going to be able to. I'll put the link in the show notes.
it's a misspelled title of a song that I really like from many years ago. But the thing is, I actually, Adam knows, I collect sugar bags.
Yeah.
And then I take pictures of the sugar bags and I write
the weirdest hobby I've ever heard. Yeah, like,
but actually you had a really good point, because when you brought me sugar from your trip to the US and you said, I know why you do it because people think about you when you do it. And like, that wasn't my original intent. But I take pictures of the sugar and I put them on the blog, and it's actually sugar.blog is the title. I just haven't bought it yet. And the tagline is some sweet stories. Because I love wordplay. So
my Polish mother-in-law has got this uncanny tendency. I don't know if it's a Polish thing alone, but she steals tea bags from hotels and stuff. There's like millions of these things everywhere.
So do you steal them or do you just take them?
I mean, stealing is probably a very strong word, right? She sneaks them off.
Not using at the spot.
I'm a bit worried about you.
I just collect sugar bags.
A new one. Incoming.
I see a Central European tendency, a little bag things.
Give me some sugar.
She's one of those.
But the cool thing is people send it to me by post. People, like, I would come to my desk at the office and people know that there would be sugar lying on my desk because people go on business trips and bring it for me. So
that's brilliant.
It really brings people together.
Okay, so Adam, do you have any quirky things, and then where can people get hold of you?
I don't do quirky yet, I hope, at least. If depending on what's your goal in contacting me, you can hit me up on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, so I'm everywhere basically.
Okay. You're not a prolific
writer.
Mostly,
yeah, I don't add people I don't know on Facebook. So
That's a good strategy.
Yeah, so if you have something that's rather professional, let's keep it professional on LinkedIn.
Let's keep it on LinkedIn. Yeah. Guys, I just want to say thank you for taking time on your weekend to come sit with me and behind all kinds of dodgy microphones to talk.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, and good luck with the rest of the design. I hope to see some excellent stuff happening at TEDx. And yeah, good luck.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to Block Thinking. You can find more information and the show notes for this episode at www.blockthinking.com. That is blockthinking without the K.com. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes or any of your favorite podcast platforms. We thrive on critique, so feel free to leave comments on iTunes or get hold of us directly. Thanks for listening.
Right, you know what we forgot to talk about?
Your
bed under the kitchen.
Oh, yeah, we do. I don't think it's good to talk about it without people having a picture. So it might be hard to explain. Because if you say that, okay, so my bedroom is beneath my kitchen.
Doesn't make sense, right?
It sounds because, like you're walking down the stairs.
But it is really cool. I mean, his bed slides out from under the kitchen.
You know that when Adam was designing his flat, you have to talk about this. He prototyped everything in his apartment out of
cardboard. Actually, I made cardboard boxes. You know, I made like prototypes.
So you actually built your
house out of cardboard
to scale,
one to one. One to one. Listen, this is just a small flat, okay? So
I could physically walk into the platform
because the platform requires obviously support, right?
Yeah, yeah, you can't step on the platform to hold the weight.
But you know, the
where did you build it?
In the flat.
It's one to one.
So you've built your whole design piece. So because I mean, for people listening to this, because Adam doesn't know that I'm actually still recording, is that he's got a. I'm gonna try and explain it. It's like under your kit, like.
There is a platform on which there is a kitchen, well, and yeah. beneath the platform,
the bed slides out, a huge drawer from which the bed slides out.
Yeah.
I think the important part is the apartment is about 20 square meters, so it's like the size of the apartment.
You can't swing a cat in there.
Another dead one. No, but I mean, like, it's just being really clever with the space itself. So it's not like steps going down to the bed.
And the flat, okay, let me make a connection between the flat and TEDx event. So at the very beginning, I hated the license rules. They were limitations. Yeah. I didn't like them. I wanted to do stuff that contradicted the license rules. But over the years, I understood that they actually are a really good thing. They give you direction. Mm-hmm. And they open you up to completely new areas that you didn't think about previously. And the same thing with the flat. Okay, so you have very limited space.
Yeah, you can't do anything about it.
Most people, they're like, you can't live there. There is not enough space to, you know, put stuff on, right? And I was like, not really. You can think of ways that this will be a really great place to live. And you know, but that requires design, right? So you need to think the whole place through from the ground up. And I started actually with thinking, okay, what will I do there? What kind of activities I want to be able to do in that place once it's finished? And building up from that, like reverse engineering, let's say, what do I need this place to look like in order to fulfill those needs.
But Adam, that's design.
Like I said, you need to design it.
I would even argue it's design thinking, right? You empathized, you had an insight.
With myself, I didn't have to talk. That's why it worked.
You prototype your kitchen. You couldn't walk into the kitchen at that time with a prototype. But dude, thank you so much for sharing it. It's brilliant. Like, I'll try and sneak off a photo here so I can put it on the website too. But thanks again for the time. And I think the best gold came out right at the end. Thank you, guys. Ciao. Okay.